Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com. We really appreciate all of you joining us and finding us wherever you find us. You know, appreciate you being us still out on Cannabis Radio, one of the top most downloaded programs in all of cannabis. And more importantly, finding the show as you always do through CannabisRadio.com, the Cannabis Radio app. Or you can also find us distributed through all major podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon. We don't say Google anymore. Now it's YouTube and YouTube Music. You can find our shows there as well. With that said, let's go and go to my next guest. He holds over 30 years of marketing, sales management, and client services and operations experience in the incentive marketing and loyalty marketing fields across a wide range of industries. And his company is, we've known as one of the fastest growing cannabis companies in the cannabis industry. So he was with me here on Blunt Business back in 2019. That's been pre-COVID, right? And what has been on the network since. But back in 2019, we interviewed him when his platform reached the milestone of 5 million customers. And right now, I'm happy to catch back up with it again, the CEO of Spring Big down here in South Florida, like myself, and their CEO, Jeffrey Harris. Jeffrey, thanks for being back on.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Look forward to hanging out together.
Now, what's the actual count now from 5 million? Where are we at now?
So we're over 40 million active customers on the platform at this point in time. So I think we have over 3,000 cannabis retail locations. And I think, and our clients, because again, we're the software platform that helps our clients implement and manage their customer loyalty and digital communications program. So it's really our clients that are the ones that are enrolling customers into their programs. But on behalf of our clients, we house over 40 million active cannabis consumers at this point in time.
Now, one of the areas that you've been doing as of late, and it was over the holiday season, it would make total make sense about this, but and not the first time we talked about it. I remember talking to a guest a couple of years ago about the idea of gift card programs and convenient payment solutions with e-gift cards. Well, and that was going back a while, and I remember there were some pretty large-ended or really long-standing companies that had looked into exploring the cannabis industry to be in gift cards and have been doing it. But then there comes Spring Big with your loyalty platform and offering gift cards this past holiday season. They feature builds on recent product launches across the platform to revolutionize the way customers engage with retailers through secure, user-friendly, and efficient payment solutions. And you're paving the way for a future where dispensary transactions are easier and more convenient than ever. So this launch happened over the holiday season. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so it's really exciting. You know, as part of our loyalty offering to our retailers who then provide it to their customers, when a consumer participates in a retailer's loyalty program, one of the features or one of the components of the loyalty program is the consumer receives kind of like their loyalty wallet, a digital wallet where they could see how many points they have in their loyalty program. They could see what rewards are available to them. If the retailer has made any unique offers to that customer to drive them into the store, there's an area of the wallet where they can see what offers are available to them. They have the ability to shop online via the retailer's e-commerce site through the wallet. We have a messaging center so they could see the messages that a retailer sends to that consumer so they could view the messages very easily within the wallet. And we saw an opportunity to kind of combine the opportunity for payments within the wallet. So if you think about for those Starbucks customers out there that have the Starbucks app where they basically load a payment option that allows them to load kind of prepaid Starbucks dollars to be used either, you know, online or in the store, we created and conceptualized the same idea. So now, in addition to everything I just mentioned in the wallet, we now have an additional component where there'd be like a dollar sign icon at the bottom. A consumer for retailers that are using this service, and we have more and more that are starting to use it every day, a consumer can pop open that icon, and then they could basically preload dollars using existing tools that they have, whether it's credit, debit, their ACH. They could preload dollars onto that prepaid account. They can then go into the store and actually use that payment option within the store, or they also have the opportunity to e-gift cards as well. So it's a dual purpose tool. One is to be able to gift e-gift cards to friends and family Second is to actually use it like a Starbucks app where they could load dollars onto their prepaid wallet, and then they could take that prepaid wallet in the store and use it to pay for their product in the store. So it's really exciting. We're already seeing nice adoption. Obviously, with anything new like that, it takes a little while for retailers to vet it and just to make sure that they understand it, they understand the economics, they understand how quickly they're going to get their money, they understand what the consumer experience is. So, but we're off to a really nice start, and we think that there's a lot of legs with this, and it has a real, it fills a real need in the marketplace by giving consumers the ability to have dollars on a prepaid account when they walk into the store, so they don't have to worry about either bringing cash, getting cash from the ATM, or other ways to pay for things. So it's a nice, it's a nice.
You bring up Starbucks in that whole conversation, and I'm thinking about the fact that that's exactly how you could use that, or Dunkin' Donuts is the same thing, where on their app, you know, it's not using necessarily a credit card. You might use a credit card to go ahead and put money into the gift card, but it's because of the way they use the gift card as a means of paying with a gift card to get more points on, you know, a loyalty. One thing I was going to ask too is, now, in the time you've had Spring Break doing this program for loyalty, one thing I always notice about is that for all these rewards programs, these loyalty programs, it's a matter of gauging how much you need to put as a goal for someone to reach in order for them to either get swag or something else that benefits them, a percent, you know, a dollar discount on merchandise or product, whatever it is. When you looked at this over the last, you know, 5 years, at least, so we've been talking about it. I know it's been longer than that. When you look at what you need to go and do to make the loyalty rewards program engaging, talk to me about setting the price, the rewards points, and when you're allowing the points to reach a certain level, what that magic number has been and where it has changed to give somebody a significant discount that makes them want to stay engaged on there and use the loyalty rewards and come to the business as much as possible.
Yeah, sure. I think that's a, you know, it's an insightful question, because there are various components that make up a successful loyalty program. So obviously the one that comes to mind first is, you know, they're going to earn points for every purchase they make, and then they could use those points for discounts in the store. So that's a piece, and I'll get to answer your specific question in a sec. There are other pieces too, right? Like, you know, at its core, a loyalty program is really a quid pro quo between the consumer and the store. And the quid pro quo is that the store offers unique benefits to the consumer, and in exchange, the consumer allows the store to use the information that is available to them on that consumer to make the consumer's experience with that store more meaningful. And what do I mean by that? Obviously, that's points, but it's also offers that resonate with that consumer. So if I'm a shopper at a store and I buy a certain category of product, then giving me offers on the stuff that I buy is very meaningful to me. Letting me know about specials before the general population so I can get it before they run out of stock is an interesting opportunity for me. Right. So there's more than just the points. But when we get to the points, and it is a little bit different state by state, but when we get to talk about points, what is important, there's two pieces to it. One is you don't want too many customer visits to pass before they have the opportunity right. to earn the reward, because then the consumer loses interest. Meaning, if I said to you, hey, it's going to take you 30 visits to earn something, you're going to say, oh, that's just going to take too long. That's not exciting to me. So one is we try to keep the quid pro quo to be between 3 to 4 visits, maybe 5 max, where within 5 visits, a customer can earn something for their loyalty with that store.
Now, does it matter how much the amount that they're spending each time? Does that
kind of count? Yes, it does, for sure. So we look at the average spend, and the average spend in different states is different. So we look at the average spend. We then kind of look at, okay, what would they be spending after 3, 4, and 5 visits? So we get an idea of what the average customer is going to spend in total. And we then look at, based on the average spend, so let's assume in a certain state, the average spend is $50 each visit. So you want a reward to be somewhere in the $10 range, $15 range. So it's somewhere more than 20% of the spend, which is a meaningful piece. So for a state that's running a program that, you know, where it's a $50 average spend, you want that initial reward or that entry-level reward to be about $10. If it's $100 average spend, you probably want that initial reward to be $15 to $20 because you want it to be meaningful enough that I'm going to want to take advantage of it, but you also want to leave room for the customer to use their own money when they're visiting the store as well. Because what we do find when a customer redeems a reward, if it's organized correctly, they will spend more than they're being given in the reward. So if the usual average sale is $50 in the state, and I'm using a $10 reward, usually, not all the time, but usually you'll see the customer spend more than $60 because they think they got $10 for free, so they might as well get more stuff. So that's the nuance. So the nuance is somewhere between 3 to 5 visits, and the other piece is you probably want them to have the ability to redeem a reward that equates to about 20% of the average purchase amount.
It's always a lot of finagling for me when I use a loyalty program. So, okay, Starbucks over the holiday season, you know, they give you these points where you're like, okay, if you're spending, you know, so many days a week, here are bonus stars. But what I'm going to do is, you know, it's during that time of year where they're trying to go ahead and get so much business in because people, they know they're going to go out holiday shopping. I'm sure spring break did the same thing with all the retails they work with. Holiday season, people are going to the stores a lot more, frequently a lot more, already planning to go and spend more. So you double the points, triple the points maybe in certain products. Or if there's certain products that they're going to buy, they'll receive an extra amount of points, whatever that might be. I don't know if that's something that can be set up. But then after all this is done, January, February, where we are now, I'm just cashing in the stars, the loyalty points that I already used. So my thing is, I know I'm not going to get that kind of bang for my buck again by cashing into the app and taking those loyalty points. I'm not going to get those level of loyalty points. But do you ever look at what you have to do in terms of where, of course, there's the spend, they're making the good earn points, but then also trying to earn extra points? Is that something that's really considered a lot, say, during 420, 710, and holidays? Is there kind of a schedule to that?
Yeah. So I think, you know, what retailers usually are looking at, if they look at the calendar, which is similar to, I think, you as a consumer do at Starbucks, right? They look at the calendar and they look at the events throughout the year, which usually equate to busier shopping periods, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Valentine's Day is coming up. That's going to be a busier shopping period. Now, obviously, for Valentine's Day, you know, people are going to be thinking about offering various types of bonus offers and promotions on edibles, right? Because that's kind of like, that fits with the holiday. And then a few days later, you have President's Weekend, right? So therefore, they're going to be doing something there. Why? Because there's a long weekend. There's an extra day off. People have the ability to kind of, you know, lay back and relax for a bit more. So that's going to be a big shopping period. And then, you know, the next one comes and, you know, they look through the holiday. So, you know, I think when retailers use bonus points to motivate people, they're doing it either for three reasons. One is it's a slow shopping period and they want to try to beef up shopping and sales during a slower shopping period. So that can be certain days of the week, like a Monday or a Tuesday, which are not as busy as Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. It could be during actually the busy times of the week, because during the busy times of the week, they know customers are going to shop. And now the question is, which store are they going to go to? Are they going to go to store A or store B? So since I know they're going to be shopping more during those days, maybe I want to run promotions during those days to get them to come to me versus to go to somebody else. And then the third aspect is when it's more tailored to the brand or the category that customers buy. So for example, with some of the retailers within cannabis that also have their own manufacturing and growing facilities, and they make more margin on those products, they may say, hey, I'm going to run bonus points on my stuff, because instead of me getting a 45 or a 50% gross margin on those products, I'm getting a 75% gross margin on those products. So therefore, they're going to run promotions on those products because they get, you know, they make more money on those products. So it could be any of those things, but bonuses are not necessarily just implemented during the holidays, although that is definitely a period where they do it because they know customers are shopping and they want to capture the share of wallet from those customers when they're shopping, but they also want to be doing it throughout the year as well strategically. You don't want to run bonuses all the time because then they're not bonuses anymore, but you want to do them strategically throughout the year to drive the behavior that they're looking for, which is obviously getting customer to come in more often and spend more money.
You're in South Florida like I am, and I'm going to use an example here about a loyalty program that I think, you know, if you want to go and give out so much to get people to come back to you, there is such a thing as giving too much out in loyalty. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm a Tampa Bay Buccaneers fan, right? And we used to have a lot of watch parties with about a dozen of us, and we would go to Duffy's, you know, the Sports Grill. It's a chain of restaurants, regional here.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
In South Florida, their deal is basically every $100, you get $10 you can use towards their food. But when food is subpar, and then there's customer service, which is the reason we stopped going to them, and that all that business on Sundays would go away, is because you could tell that the quality of what they were giving out, the service was not that well done, because after COVID, they just suffered. And they did a thing where, as a business, they decided to go and shut down their business for 3 months and then come back open instead of trying to survive through COVID when, you know, businesses were still able to stay open. So even the loyalty program might be good, but you just can't give a loyalty program and give out so much because, you know, it's a little bit suspicious. And then what are you getting for it? You're not getting quality product.
No, 100%. And I think, you know, I think there are, when people think about which store they're going to frequent, which restaurant they're going to frequent, there are three components to it. The first component is the quality of the product itself. That's the first one. The next component is the level of service. And the third component are the perks. But the perks, which is loyalty fits into the perks, is number three on the list. So, like, if you think about it, right, if there are certain stores or certain shops that don't look appealing, you know, it may take a little while to get your food, but the quality is just so good that you're willing to wait online and get your food because ultimately the food is great. There are other companies out there. Let's use restaurants as the example because you use Duffy's, right, where the quality is good. It's not amazing, but it's good.
Yeah.
Service is great. So you're going to go there, right? Because the combination of that makes you go there. Nobody's going to go to a store if the quality is not good and the service is not good because their loyalty program is great, because no one wants to go there. So you're 100% right. The loyalty program is a piece of the equation after you think about quality and service. There's no, you're 100. And that, by the way, is the same in cannabis stores too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, cannabis store, and it's like not a, you know, it's not a nice store.
Oh, bud tender, stock not put well. It's
product,
not organized.
Product's not good. You know, I don't care what they offer. You're not going to go there because really, what you're going for is because you want to buy quality product and have a nice experience. That always will come first.
Yeah, that's one of those things I don't think ever gets talked about a lot. But I mean, it's amazing how practical it could just be from just looking at conventional businesses and how it applies into cannabis, because I would imagine that your team also, that's one of those things where it needs to be instituted. If you want a good loyalty program, obviously Spring Break's around there for a long time. We've talked about the Jeffrey and the folks there, Michaela and all, for a long time here. And it's not just because they're in our backyard. We've just, you know, we've known about it. That's why you have 40 million customers at 3,000 stores. But it's also those 3,000 stores need to be aware that if you want to keep more customers coming into the door, not just have the advantage of a Spring Break loyalty rewards program, but also good product, good service. Has to be all in hand, put it like that.
100%. I mean, and I think the good product, and listen, in a cannabis store, the good product is first, right? Good service is second, perks are third, 100%. Meaning you would even, you know, I think people that are really, you know, really interested in high quality cannabis product, right? If you found a store that the quality was just off the charts, but the service wasn't so good, you'd probably deal with it, right? Because when you walk out that store, you're getting really high quality product. Right. Then, you know, as long as, but then again, if the quality is good and the service is good, that works for me too. But when, if either of those are bad, I mean, unless the quality is unbelievable, yeah, the perks won't matter.
100%.
I'm here with Jeffrey Harris, CEO of SpringBig. Website is springbig.com. When we come back, there have been a lot of Canton companies that have taken advantage of, well, we want to continue to grow the company. Let's take it public. So we're going to talk about Jeffrey's experience when it comes to having SpringBig go public out there on the in the stock market. We're going to talk about that. And then more importantly, we're also going to talk about, as a business owner, the benefits from the business side of a potential Schedule III drug classification. You know, here on Blunt Business, we've talked about that a lot. But to get the, you know, first-person account as to what are the real benefits that can be coming aboard once that classification comes into play later this year, which I expect, we're going to talk about that more here with Jeffrey Harris here on Blunt Business after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Jeffrey Harris, CEO of SpringBig, once again returning on the program. But 2019 was when we had you on here on this program, but it was 3 years ago you were over on Plant Profits at the end of 2021. And at that point, you were announcing that the company was going public. It was right before it was going public in December of that year. And tech companies like yours, I'm going to just say, and I was just reading across the board, they've gotten some substantial press since then. And let's just say that the roller coaster of the stock market is what it is. I just want to get from you, if you could talk about the experience you've had thus far, taking the company public as a means of growth.
Yeah, so I feel like when we actually ended up, it took us longer to actually go public than we thought. We were initially expecting to be public in December of 21, but we didn't actually get it done as the process took longer until June of 22. And there was a lot of excitement around going public because we felt that, you know, we were going public through a SPAC. And at the time that we signed the agreement to go public in the summer of 21, we thought that was a means to really raise a lot of capital because the SPAC that we were going public with had $200 million in their SPAC. And we thought that this was a great opportunity to raise a significant amount of capital and then be able to leverage that capital to be able to grow the business both organically and not organically faster. But what ended up happening because of the delay that it took us, the SPAC market turned. And most people were not leaving their money in the SPAC because people that invest in a SPAC always have the opportunity to pull their money out once they find out who the SPAC is merging with. So we didn't end up with nearly as much money as we were expecting, which made the road, once we went public, more difficult than we expected. We've made it through. The stock market has not been, you know, SpringBig's friend yet. But my advice to people when they're thinking about, do I go public? Do I not go public? You cannot be thinking about going public as a short-term hit, meaning a quick hit. You have to make sure that you're thinking about a little bit more longer term, where you're going to have to invest, get the public comfortable with your business and get the public comfortable with the growth prospects and how you're performing. And over time, the hope is that your stock price will appreciate as more and more investors get to learn about your business and get to learn about how good your business is. So, you know, we ended up going public at a terrible time. And it's been an interesting ride since then just to navigate the process of being public and not hitting the stock price expectations that we were expecting to hit and managing the expectations of our investors, which is obviously very important. But one thing I always tell our investors is that I'm one of our largest investors, if not our largest. So therefore, I very much care about, you know, us doing the right things by this business to grow the price of our stock, which will grow the equity value of our company. So I am not looking for anything different than any other investor. I am right in the same boat with these guys. And our goal is to continue to work hard to build a good business and then get the public to recognize it and then get our stock price to be where we hope it and expect it to be. So, but it's definitely not, it's not for the faint of heart. That is for sure.
But I wanted to make a few points about this, Jeffrey. The thing is, in this market, okay, some people with a political slant could have told you, well, maybe it's not a good time to go and get to the market because you know, the incoming presidential administration. Listen, I'm not going to go political on this, but I'm just going to make the point. If they decide to go ahead and cut oil production in the country, we get into military conflicts, yeah, then we're going to have a volatility in the market. And the inflation came into play. Everybody's going to hurt from that, except unless you're an S&P 500 company. Okay, I mean, yeah, thank you. My ETF for that getting to 12% return, but it's like everything else is in the dump. The one thing is, too, is that cannabis is going to be always under a different microscope because of the fact that, well, there's projections that, you know, that can, and all these cannabis companies have been doing the same thing where, of course, growth, there's projections that can be made in any company. It doesn't matter how big you are. It could be Disney. If you're not reaching projections, these media companies are also getting hurt by this. I can tell you for radio and the terrestrial radio industry, for example, when you have companies that are being delisted, justifiably, by the way, and they are billions of dollars in debt, they're going into bankruptcy because they have no choice. All they're going the same way. They have no projections to show revenue more than 1%. And if they do, it's on political advertising because they can't get advertising in the door at all. So it's one of those things where it's just there are some companies that are on the market that are more critically put out there and under a microscope than others. Like others should be penalized because you're absolutely, you know, there's you're not coming out of here, you know, requesting like a $50 billion, you know, contract or a salary every year plus bonuses. Like in those radio industry companies, they're getting bonuses still allowed even after their bankruptcy filings are finished. But that's, you know, it's chronic. It's stupid. But
yeah,
cannabis is going to be put under a certain level of microscope and way too microscopic at that.
Yeah, listen, we are here's my take on it. You know, we, as I mentioned, we have over 40 million cannabis consumers on our database. We're installed in over 3,000 locations. Yep. You know, we do about $30 million of real technology revenue. We're a real business. So, and, you know, we have, even though the cannabis industry is going through a tough time, and it's going through a tough time from the perspective of there's not as much capital going into it, so the growth of new locations and new markets are much slower than people anticipated. There's because of the lack of capital and because in some markets, there's just more stores than they need. You know, stores are not performing the way they expect it to perform. They don't have the money to invest in those businesses. So therefore, there's without a doubt, you know, the cannabis industry is going through some difficult times. But even with that, we still grew in 2023. We expect to grow in 2024. You know, we are a technology business with technology margins that are north of 70% gross margin. So, you know, we've done some hard work over the last year to bring our expenses down because that was necessary because we needed to make sure we got to profitability, which we got to in December of this past year. So we needed to make sure that we brought our expenses down. So we've gone through a long process of thinking through how to bring our expenses down, but still be able to service our customers well and to provide the new products that we think are important. So we've done a lot of hard work. We got to keep doing the hard work, but we really believe we are set up for success in 2024 and beyond because of the work that we've done at the end of 2022 and 2023.
Right. And that's the thing. It's everybody's got to go through, and the cannabis sector, the investors are trying to get in here because they are trying to, they're trying to find, you know, outside the normal gamut of mainstream stocks that are out there to go after and to invest in, there are those that are hedging bets that cannabis is going to grow, but they're also waiting for, you know, not just what your company can do, but also waiting for legalization, waiting for the Safe Banking Act, waiting for some other relief measures that are going to be brought up by congressional vote that will make a change. So they're also just kind of, they're going along for the ride and they're waiting for the growth to go. Well, there's growth that you're making. And, you know, if you're doing everything and managing right, but it's all cannabis companies that have been going through that. I mean, if it's not on the NASDAQ or the OTC or the Toronto Stock Exchange or the GBOE, either which way, there's all these, or CBOE, and it's all these areas where, you know, cannabis is going to get put into this spot. And it's just in the stock market itself. Like even for myself, I remember at COVID time when all those companies were recovering back, that's when I got on the ride. But after that, 2021, I was like, oh, you know what? I see what's changing in the horizon as an investor. I mean, I don't have that kind of money to go ahead and put in there and keep dropping in. So I just got out. And as far as cannabis companies, whenever I did put into a cannabis company, I lost because it was just like that. But at the time, this just the drive of mainstream investments, they can also turn what happens for a company as well. And it doesn't help either. so it's also who's investing in it that wants to go ahead and, you know, go the opposite, right? And push for, you know, the sell-off to try to go ahead and get money off of that. And there's obviously people that are really putting a lot of money towards that. So, you know, a lot of existential forces that are playing into all this that don't really reflect what the company's doing itself, what Spring Break is doing itself. I want to just, is that pretty much a good way to put it?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, listen, we have to do the work. You know, I kind of think about it, right? It's a partnership, right? We got to do the work. And some things have to happen that are bigger than us in order to really put momentum behind not only our stock, but other companies as well. But even when those things change to hopefully give us that momentum and the wind at our back, the company still has to be doing the right things, performing well, executing, and growing. Otherwise, we're going to be viewed like, you know, just not a good company. So we need to be viewed like a good company that is investable. And then on top of that, we need an industry that's going to help lift the tide of those good companies. So I agree with you.
All right. So now, moving along, I wanted to get your take as a business owner about what are the advantages, what is going to be coming, which is the one substantial thing that we're going to get this year from Washington, D.C. That is the DEA will take the recommendation and schedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. So the reclassification of cannabis will allow cannabis businesses to benefit from tax credits and initiatives for programs or systems that many are already implementing. If cannabis is rescheduled to Schedule 3, businesses will no longer have to worry about the tax bills and rates associated with Section 280E, the IRS Revenue Code. We've talked about this extensively. Now, significantly, this would improve overall profit margins, most likely prospectively from the effective date of rescheduling. So as we've been talking about with the market and what quarterly reports you put out there, that immediate impact of 280E being taken off, you know, the issues that would be a constant obstacle that a Spring Break would have to go through, what big difference would this make?
Yeah, so I think that, so you talked about both, right? So you talked about the descheduling or the rescheduling from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, and you talked about safe banking. So I'll focus on the rescheduling first, and then I'll talk about safe banking. So the when I explain the rescheduling to people, here's the way I explain it. I try to really dumb it down so everyone understands it, right? So for every dollar a cannabis plant-touching company sells right now, so if they sell a dollar's worth of product, Let's assume they make 50 cents on that dollar of product that they sold. Today, because cannabis is a Schedule 1, not a Schedule 3, and because of 280E, that plant-touching company is paying their corporate income tax on the 50 cents of gross profit, on the 50 cents that they made on that $1. Even though they have a lot of expenses underneath that 50 cents, they're required to pay tax on the 50 cents. Now, any other company out there, let's assume that they sold something for a dollar and they made 50 cents gross profit and they had 40 cents of expense. So instead of them paying tax on the 50 cents like the cannabis plant touching guy, they would be paying tax on 10 cents. So figure, let's just use 30% tax, right? So if a cannabis company is paying 30% corporate tax on 50 cents, that's 15 cents. As compared to a non-cannabis company paying 30% tax on 10 cents, that's 3 cents. So the cannabis company is paying 12 cents for every dollar, 12 cents more in tax for every dollar that they sell compared to a non-cannabis company. 12 cents. I mean, start multiplying that. That's a huge number. So by getting Schedule 1 to be rescheduled to Schedule 3 and getting cannabis plant touching companies to pay the 3 cents of tax instead of the 15 cents of tax, that 12 cent difference, not all of that money is going to drop to investing in their business, right? They're going to want to take some of that and profit from some of that. But a piece of that 12 cents is going to go into the reinvesting of the business. That's where it benefits Spring Break. So if you said, hey, of that 12 cents that they don't have to pay, 6 cents is going to go into, you know, reinvesting to grow the business, that's an additional 6%. And if they're doing $100 million a year in sales, that's an extra $6 million that they could spend to grow their business. And that's where SpringBig, not only, of course, the plant-touching company benefits, but that's where SpringBig will benefit as well. Even though we're not a plant-touching company and we pay taxes as a non-plant-touching company, our customers would be able to invest so much more in growing their customers and growing their revenue with customers by the rescheduling Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. So to me, that is by far and away the biggest opportunity for the industry to continue to grow and to move the ball forward.
But now, before you say anything about safe banking, I will just make this point across that I don't see safe banking being passed in this current congressional cycle or until there's a supermajority of whichever, Republican, Democrat, whatever it is. It has to be a supermajority. You know, specifically by two-thirds of the House has to be one side of the party or another, and then it has to be at least two-thirds on the other side as well for safe banking and legalization to come in. I don't think you're going to get anything past of those two areas unless you have that. And I don't see it anytime soon. But
I don't disagree. But I think the benefit of safe banking, which is not as big a benefit, by the way, as the rescheduling is a much bigger benefit to cannabis companies. But the safe banking piece, what it allows to happen, it would hopefully allow cannabis stores to accept credit and debit cards because the federal banking system would be able to bank cannabis companies. You know, the cannabis companies would be able to be banked by federally insured banks. So that's another one. Some of the major investors, whether it be public or private, that can't touch cannabis right now because it's not federal, it's not safe banking, it's not there, would be able to do it. So there would be some, I think there'd be benefit of more liquidity, access to capital, and more normal banking opportunities for cannabis companies. But you're right. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon. And the other one is more important. The other one really puts money in the pocket of the cannabis company, which then allows them to spend more money.
Now, moving along, I'm going to take from CPAPracticeAdvisor.com. They talk about also that with 280E no longer applicable, cannabis reclassification would warrant eligibility for a few attractive tax deductions. We haven't talked about this before, but let's go ahead and go through what they're saying here. For example, cannabis businesses would be able to file for deductions for all their business expenses as any regular business would, including utilities, payroll, marketing, and more. Additionally, accounting can be done on a cash basis reporting structure, and businesses will have access to accelerated depreciation, bonus depreciation, and full expensing under Section 179. Investors in cannabis pass-through entities will be able to claim the 20% qualified business income deduction under Section 199A. So these are some other areas that it could be deductions. For a company like yours, you know, are these areas that you could take advantage of?
Yeah, we already take advantage of those now because we're not plant touching, so we can take advantage of those today. What you just described is what any business outside of cannabis can do, right? Okay. So, you know, so that's what I meant. When I meant by, you know, they sell something for a dollar, they make 50 cents gross profit. Right now, they're paying tax on the 50 cents. They don't get any deductions at all. But a non-cannabis company who has 40 cents of deductions pays tax on 10 cents. So that 40 cents is some of the categories that you just mentioned are part of that 40 cents. And then there's others, right? There's R&D tax credits that, you know, it becomes the ability to leverage all of the benefits of the tax code that are available to every other business. And that's where really these plant touching companies have to be, because right now they're really operating with two hands tied behind their back by having to pay so much tax that they cannot invest to grow the businesses that they have. That's really hurting their ability to grow faster.
But also federal tax. Not even you can count what state or city tax you all
talk about. I'm talking about federal tax. That's what I'm talking about. No,
that's what I meant. But that's the thing is we're distinguishing that we're talking about here is the advantages would be federal, not anything lower than that.
Correct. 100%. Right now, they get to play on the same level playing field as others when it comes to state income tax. That's not any different because it's legal in the state. It's really the federal side that they're really at a disadvantage compared to non-cannabis companies.
So when you look at it, once companies get a chance to take advantage of this, if you had to give a percentage of how much more revenue a company is potentially able to go and keep, what would that number be?
Oh, it could be up to, I think it could be up to 12%. So it could be up to 12%. Now, what they do with that 12% is going to be different for each business, right? Some businesses will just pocket the 12%. Some businesses will invest a piece of the 12%. So, but I think it's somewhere between 10 to 12% that they'll benefit from.
And from that, I'm always recommending for those reinvest. Like, yes. Honestly, well, not, put yes. back in the day. Well,
100%. They're going to reinvest a piece of it. I don't think they're going to reinvest all of it, honestly, because I think they want to build a cash cushion and they want to build cash on their balance sheet. So everyone wants to be smart about how they use their cash, but they will definitely be reinvesting a piece of it. No doubt about it.
And that's what they should do. We got some final questions here for Jeffrey Harris, CEO of Spring Big here on Blunt Business. And we'll do that after just a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with final questions with Jeffrey Harris, CEO of Spring Big. By the way, mentioned the stock market and the fact that they are available on the stock market if you want to go ahead and invest. Under Spring Big Holdings, and they are on the OTC markets, the OTCQX, under the ticker symbol SBIG. SBIG. And again, the website is springbig.com if you want to go and take a look at the loyalty program and be one of the 3,000 businesses that are already working with them alongside their bases of 40 million customers at springbrick.com. If you want to go and learn more about that, go and take a look at that as well as we go and wrap things up. So one more thing about the scheduling of cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 and what business advantages will be coming from this, specifically the removal of Section 280E for businesses, for accounting purposes, that, you know, we were just saying before the break, that companies could probably get maybe 12% of their revenue, of that money back they've been putting into the taxes. They can now finally write off and put it back into their business or hold on to it as they should. Now, one of the things that's come up here is that the federal government offers several financial incentives for companies to adhere to business practices that aid the improvement of their communities, the environment, and the economy, and some of the other advantages they can have as well if when reclassification happens. So here's what they're saying. It would allow cannabis businesses to benefit from these tax credits and initiatives, for programs or systems that many are already implementing. It would include hiring individuals from specified groups, including ex-felons, unemployed veterans, and recipients of federal assistance programs, as well as leveraging energy-efficient and green energy tactics for their growing and processing operations. Credits will also be made available for research related to technology, agricultural, and medical advancements. And while there has been no set date for a final decision, when reclassification is approved, when, cannabis businesses stand to experience significant fiscal relief. There's no question that they need it. And recent reports state that only 25% of cannabis businesses are profitable, and nearly all are plagued by heavy oversight and auditing by the IRS. So these incentives being also made available for those after descheduling, what do you think about the potential possibilities of that? Is that something that, you know, when you look at other companies, what should they be doing when those chances, when those opportunities arise?
Oh, 100%. I think the answer would be that, you know, these companies now will be treated as same as non-cannabis companies, and they need to get together, which, you know, a lot of these cannabis companies already have, their accounting partners to understand, okay, what are all the different opportunities I have from a tax standpoint to take advantage of the tax code? For example, you mentioned research and development. That's the R&D credit that they can start taking advantage of that. They can take advantage of some of the other grants that are available for, as you said, for hiring certain categories of employees. So all of those opportunities are going to be available to them. So the quick and the right answer is, as soon as this happens, and I agree with you, I think it's going to happen sooner rather than later, you get with your accounting firm, your tax specialist, and you say, okay, what's everything out there that I can start thinking about taking advantage of? How do we do it? And then they start taking advantage of it, because they'll be able to take advantage of every tax code opportunity that's available to any non-cannabis company. And I think that that's going to be a huge opportunity.
Now, obviously, we know with a lot of states that have been opening up, they've all instituted social equity programs. So for some of these companies, they've already been playing into what would make them eligible for these tax credits. So, and these initiatives. when it comes to hiring ex-felons, so if it's legacy operators being brought into the play, or unemployed veterans, and, you know, people that are disenfranchised or oppressed, they're getting a chance to go into this. And also, a lot of companies, especially cultivators, trying to be very organic, very green for their own sake. So by their advantage of already, you know, adhering to a social equity aspect because their license had put them as such, do you see them instantly getting the benefit of that if they qualify for it just because they already did that beforehand? Were they getting any kind of benefits before, or are they going to get those benefits now once descheduling happens?
Yeah, so I think the if they're getting benefits today, and honestly, I don't want to misspeak because I don't necessarily know rules state by state, but if the state is providing them with benefits as a social equity participant and a social equity business owner, they're getting those today. If there are federal opportunities, as soon as this rescheduling happens, they'll be able to take advantage of that. And one thing I think that's important just to know, just a little bit of a plug, SpringBig has a very robust social equity program for business owners that are social equity business owners that are starting their businesses. And if they go to our website at springbig.com, they'll be able to see that. But we are extremely supportive of the social equity community and people that qualify for social equity that are starting businesses, because we really believe it's such a great opportunity for the industry. And we're here to help them. So please, if you're a social equity business owner and you're listening today, please take a look at our website. We'd be more than happy to tell you more about it and help you.
That's great. You're going to have, obviously, you know, for a lot of companies that are looking at, that are social equity licensees, whatever benefits they can get right now is what they need. Obviously, we've talked a lot about, you know, number one is always about the revenue, whatever kind of capital they can get, they can continue to further their growth. But what you're offering on top of that, also much beneficial as well when it comes to providing the program and the resources that you have as well for loyalty as well, which is great. Jeffrey, I love this conversation. I think we've covered so much ground. And when we look at what's going on now with descheduling, that is the area that's going to be looked at. It's just a matter of, I have no doubt in my mind that I think before November, before election time, this is going to be brought into play. Because, you know, for those in the presidential administration going into an election year, for all those Congress people that are either incumbents or whatever that are looking to go ahead and try to get themselves reelected, they need a win. And I say it all the time. During an election year, why cannabis is not put to the table and why nobody has decided to go ahead and legalize yet is confounds me, because the idea is that this would be one of the easiest wins for any presidential candidate or any congressional candidate if they were able to go ahead and say, yes, I was there, I helped to go ahead and get the bill passed, or I signed the bill in to let cannabis be legalized federally and go across the board. I think it's just a win-win situation. But for whatever reason, you know, they're still listening to the bidders of big pharma and alcohol and tobacco so that things are put to a certain place. But, you know, I'm never going to go ahead and downplay what this decision by the DEA to deschedule is going to do, because it's a profound impact.
100% agree.
So, Jeffrey, one more time, just before things are going to go into, we obviously just brought up about the social equity assistance you also offered to those companies through SpringBig, but real quickly, take a minute to go and tell people about what they should be doing about coming to your website and working on being one of those companies to work with you on the loyalty program and getting a loyalty program in their outfit.
Absolutely. So we are servicing all retailers and brands, by the way, in the United States and Canada. So if you're listening from either the United States or Canada, please visit us at springbig.com. Let us know that you're interested in learning more, and we will have a team member reach out to you to see how we might be able to help. We are really expert at what we do, both from the standpoint of helping our retail clients from a loyalty standpoint, but also in today's world, especially helping them from a communication standpoint, in particular text messaging. We are excellent at helping retailers get their text messages delivered on time and appropriately to their customers. And if any of your listeners are struggling from a text message deliverability standpoint, which we hear happens a lot, please feel free to reach out, and we'll be more than happy to see if we can help. And again, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed the conversation a lot.
I appreciate it, Jeffrey. Again, Jeffrey Harris, CEO of SpringBig. springbig.com. And again, the stock ticker symbol for them, if you want to go ahead and look in the, and put some of your investment in SpringBig Holdings on the OTCQX, stock ticker symbol SBIG. Jeffrey, thanks for being on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you as well. It was a lot.
My pleasure. And listeners, as always, thanks for listening to another Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.